Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Take AIM, Accuracy in Media's weekly talk show on Blog Talk Radio. AIM is America's original media watchdog, and every week we point out biased coverage and bring you the stories the mainstream media ignore. We encourage you to visit our website at aim.org and sign up to receive our daily email so you can keep track of what the media are up to. I'm Roger Aronoff, a media analyst with AIM. And today our show is going to be a little bit different in that the first part of the show is going to be an interview that I actually recorded yesterday with our editor Cliff Kincaid. We'll be getting to that in just a moment. And then we'll be back live with you in the second half hour. AIM chairman and my co-host on this show, Don Irvine, will be interviewing Peter LaBarbera of Americans for Truth, and I think you'll find both of these very interesting. Also, this week, we are having our 40th anniversary conference here in Washington at the Omni Shoreham Hotel. If any of you are in town, we urge you to come to see it, and we'll be talking about that with Cliff Kincaid. So without further ado, I'm going to go straight to the interview with Cliff, and we'll be back live with you in about 28 or 30 minutes. Our first guest today is Cliff Kincaid. Cliff is the editor of Accuracy in Media and of AIM's main publication, The AIM Report. Cliff joined AIM in 1978. He is a veteran journalist and media critic. He writes frequent columns and special reports and is the author of several books, including The Death of Talk Radio. He represents AIM at shareholders' meetings of media companies, and he has appeared on The Today Show, Hannity and Combs, The O'Reilly Factor, The CBS Evening News, Lou Dobbs Tonight, and The Glenn Beck Show. He holds a BA in Journalism and Communications from the University of Toledo and previously wrote for Human Events, Oliver North's Freedom Alliance, and served as a guest co-host on CNN's Crossfire. Mr. Kincaid is also founder and president of America's Survival. It is his representation at shareholders' meetings that has Cliff in the news this week. Cliff, welcome to Take AIM.
Roger, great to be with you.
Thanks. This has been an exciting week for AIM and is continuing to be as we have our 40th anniversary conference on Friday. We'll get into that a little bit later, but especially for you, because last week you attended the annual meeting of News Corp, the parent company of Fox News. Why don't you tell us what happened at that meeting?
Roger, as you indicated, AIM has had a tradition of taking out stock in major media companies, and that enables us to go to their annual meetings and ask questions of the top brass. This time, because I had been writing extensively about the use by Fox News of a contributor by the name of Mark Lamont Hill, I wanted to go to the annual meeting of News Corp in New York City. We had uncovered a lot of damaging information about Dr. Hill, as he's called. He's a Columbia University professor at the Teachers College, who specializes in hip-hop culture. He'd been on mostly the O'Reilly Factor, commenting about all kinds of things, domestic and foreign policy issues, way beyond his limited area of expertise, which is, again, hip-hop culture. That's rap music, breakdancing, and so forth. David Horowitz had written something on his blog at Front Page Magazine about how, when he had criticized Hill, Hill had written back responding to him. And Horowitz then discovered that Mark Lamont Hill's Twitter page had been plastered with police mugshot photos of a convicted cop killer by the name of Asada Shakur, also known as Joanne Chesimard, who had killed a New Jersey state trooper back in 1973 and was sprung out of prison by the Weather Underground and now lives in Cuba. Well, that got my attention because I've been very, very concerned about bringing these killers of police to justice, especially those who were members of the Weather Underground and the Black Liberation Army involved in the campaign of violence against the police and ordinary people back in the 60s and 70s. Shakur had been a member of the Black Liberation Army. The Black Liberation Army worked closely with the Weather Underground. So I started looking into Dr. Mark Lamont Hill, looking at what was publicly available, looking at his web pages, and was just astounded that a guy of this kind of character, not only supporting one cop killer, but two. We found he was also a big, strong supporter of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the convicted cop killer involved in the murder of police officer Daniel Faulkner. And then I found stuff on his webpage in praise of the black racist Khalid Muhammad, who was known as America's Black Hitler. Really some bizarre stuff, suggesting that Mark Lamont Hill had been a member of some kind of Nation of Islam spin-off cult-type group. So I started writing about all of this and then focusing attention on why this guy was on the O'Reilly Factor and other Fox shows. And we got quite a bit of attention with these columns, but still, Mark Lamont Hill was appearing on some of these shows. But interestingly enough, Roger, a great many of these controversial articles he had written about these figures started disappearing from his web pages. For example, his Twitter page eliminated the police mugshot photos of the cop killer, replacing them with photos of boxing legend Muhammad Ali. Well, you know, Reed Irvine, who hired me, as you indicated, back in 1978, had always impressed upon me the need to keep all the media honest. You know, we're at Accuracy in Media, we just don't go out after the liberal media. You know, we're not knee-jerk Republicans. We're conservatives, that's true, but we're not knee-jerk Republicans, and when the conservative media have a failing, we try to go after them too. And so we've tried to keep over the years Fox News honest. And I've written a number of columns about some of their faux pas. But this one was really getting to me because this Mark Lamont Hill was such a notorious character. And it wasn't that I wanted him fired necessarily. I never specifically called for him to go. But I was curious as to how he was hired. And this was a critical question because, of course, Fox News, in particular Glenn Beck, had led the campaign against Van Jones, who was a green jobs czar or special advisor in the Obama White House, wondering how Van Jones had been hired by the Obama administration, considering his background of involvement in communist and black nationalist activities, even anti-police activities. Turns out that Van Jones and Mark Lamont Hill shared a couple things in common. They were both supporters of this cop killer, Mumia Abu-Jamal, and they were both associated with the Center for American Progress, a George Soros-funded progressive group that has supplied a lot of top officials for the Obama administration. So I was asking Fox News, and this is why I went to the annual meeting, you know, who hired this guy, Hill? How did he get this job at Fox News? And remember, he wasn't just a guest. He's not somebody that gets called up and says, hey, will you be on the show? And, of course, a lot of people jump at that opportunity just to get some face time. But no, he was a contributor, meaning he had a special status. We don't know exactly how much he was paid. On a yearly basis, I've seen some estimates that it was $40,000 a year, just so he could be available on call when O'Reilly wanted him on, or he was when he was on another show, mostly on O'Reilly, though. For example, he was on a couple months ago defending some communist protesters out in Oakland who had rallied on behalf of another criminal who had killed four policemen out there. So I was curious, how did this guy get hired? Did anybody even look into his background, even look at his own web pages? And that's why I went to the annual meeting, because I figured, look, I've been asking some of the Fox News press people, I've been writing all these columns, and I really wasn't getting any answers. The only statement we had gotten out of Fox News up until the annual meeting was that, well, they disagreed with his support for the cop killer, Assata Shakur. So that's why I went, and I got up there during this part of the meeting. And Rupert Murdoch, the chairman, is up there. It's quite a fancy New York hotel. And a number of members of the board are sitting up on the dais with him. And he's at the podium and taking questions. There weren't that many questions, but I started going into my questions about how was Mark Lamont Hill hired. And I told Murdoch, I said, look, we understand the need to be fair and balanced. And that's the slogan of Fox News. But I said, this is just ridiculous. This guy is not a respectable liberal. He's really way beyond the pale. And even before I got through with my monologue, my question, Murdoch interrupted to say he appreciated our work on this matter. He's clearly very familiar with what we do at Accuracy in Media. And he said that individual, referring to Mark Lamont Hill, was fired last week. Well, that was a surprise. I didn't expect to hear the guy had been fired by the chairman of the board of the parent company of Fox News.
You're used to getting pushback on these kind of questions when you go to these meetings, rather than someone stepping in and saying, "Oh no, we hear you, and we've already taken action, huh?"
Yeah, I mean, it was the kind of thing, I've been to enough of these annual meetings to know usually you get some stonewalling, or some official or some member of the top brass will say, well, okay, we'll look into that, we'll take that under advisement, I'll ask so-and-so to check, you know, that kind of thing, putting us off, in other words. But still, I thought it'd be worthwhile to go up there personally and impress upon Murdoch and the board that this was a serious matter. And instead, of course, he says, no, that guy's been fired. And I was a little taken aback, and I said, well, he was on one of the shows last week. He had gone back on O'Reilly's show. And remember, this is the annual meeting that occurred on October 16th, Friday. So, but Murdoch assured me, no, the guy's been fired. And I, at that point, I simply said to him, congratulations, and I took my seat. And this, then it's the story, there were a few reporters in the meeting, and one from the Hollywood Reporter came up to me, and clearly this was big news. And so it was later confirmed, as if you needed, you know, when the boss fires somebody, you don't really need any additional confirmation. But nevertheless, some other leaks or sources of information confirmed that indeed Hill had been fired. But and this is big news, but I still don't know exactly how this fiasco occurred and how this guy was hired in the first place. A lot of indications are that Bill O'Reilly himself was behind it, because Mark Lamont Hill appeared on his show so many times. But we're still pressing for answers, and let me be clear that overall, and I told this to Murdoch, I congratulated him on the 13th anniversary of Fox News, and I said, we appreciate the channel, we think it has a lot of benefits. I congratulated him on the great success of his company as well as Fox News, but nevertheless, things like this are bothersome, especially when you've got a channel that's going after the White House for not properly vetting its employees. So we're still going to seek some answers as to why this happened, and I certainly hope eventually, rather than stonewall, that Bill O'Reilly himself will personally address it through his own so-called no-spin zone.
So in other words, as you just made the point, there are some parallels with this Van Jones situation, which, interestingly enough, Fox is the one that mainly brought that to the attention on Glenn Beck's show and all that. So the question is this an example of bad vetting, as it was on the question with the White House? Was it bad vetting, or was this bringing in someone that they were quite comfortable with? And I guess that same question has to be asked about Fox. Do you think this was a case of bad vetting, or they knew Mark Lamont Hill's background and hired him anyway.
You know, I'm prepared to give Fox News the benefit of the doubt. I don't think I'm prepared to give the White House the benefit of the doubt because I know too much about Obama and what he is and who he represents. But in the case of Fox News, it's hard for me to believe that somebody like O'Reilly did, certainly not Murdoch, but or Roger Ailes, who runs Fox News, understood who Mark Lamont Hill represented and his extreme far-left views. But, you know, the old saying, ignorance is no excuse. They should have just taken a look at his web pages. I mean, I found something on his curriculum vitae, his CV, in which he lists, as if he's proud of it, giving a lecture back in 2006 before a Communist Party group. I mean, just bizarre stuff. And any of this, again, could have been seen on his own web pages. In fact, in one of my latest columns, I mentioned I found something on his web pages in which he called for the reinstatement of the fairness doctrine to be used against people like Bill O'Reilly. And yet Mark Lamont Hill gets hired, in effect, by O'Reilly and Fox News. So I think they're... I don't know what they knew... but that's no excuse. And again, it's not a complete analogy or parallel because clearly the Obama administration was using taxpayer funds to pay for Van Jones and Fox News, News Corporation. These are private entities. They can really hire who they want to. But again, this is a news business. This is a news corporation. And you would think that, especially when they're rampaging and crusading against the hiring of somebody like Van Jones before they hired somebody of similar standing or comparable ilk, that they would have looked into his background. And whether they did or didn't, you know, it's clear that Hill himself was very embarrassed. I think this embarrassment must have been shared by the people of Fox News. This is why I think a lot of these embarrassing articles started to be taken down from his webpage. But, you know, that's like, I mean, it just, there was a paper trail there. We already had copies of all of that. You know, that kind of stupid cover-up wasn't going to work. And I think eventually this got to Murdoch, and he recognized it for what it was, a complete fiasco, an embarrassment, and he wanted it stopped.
That reminds me of the scene in the movie Absence of Malice where there was something embarrassing in the newspaper and one of the characters went by trying to pick up all the newspapers. And now in the age of the Internet, of course, that even becomes more impossible to put it back in the can. So what has been the reaction in the liberal media and liberal blogosphere, say, comparing that to when Van Jones was forced to resign after the pressure brought on him?
Well, it's the reaction, the response is still coming in. What is very interesting to me, and I alluded to it earlier, is that with Van Jones and Mark Lamont Hill, I don't know if they knew each other, but they clearly share some of the same pattern of associations, and that's what's very intriguing to me. I mentioned Van Jones and Mark Lamont Hill both are public supporters of the convicted cop killer Mumia Abu-Jamal. They were both associated with the Center for American Progress, the George Soros-funded entity that's been providing a lot of top officials for the Obama administration. This is a case, the more I look at it, in the case of Mark Lamont Hill, of perhaps even the infiltration of the media. Remember, Mark Lamont Hill was a paid contributor, and presumably he's an employee, he has a contract. He, in effect, was on the inside of Fox News. I don't know what he knows about Fox News. I still don't know how he exactly got hired. But he seems, although the story's been confirmed that he was indeed fired. He seems to have kept quiet himself. I don't see a lot of respectable liberals really supporting Hill because his views were so extreme and so beyond the pale. The support for the cop killers, the black racist Muhammad, etc., etc. Although it was interesting to me that one of the first liberal blogs to follow up on this story after Murdoch's announcement on October 16th was Think Progress, the blog associated with the Center for American Progress. And they referred to Hill as some kind of respectable liberal analyst. You know, I just don't think that's going to fly. And I think this is being recognized, as the Van Jones case has been, as a big debacle and fiasco for the so-called progressive movement. The difference being that I think Fox News is going to try to clean it up, and the Obama administration, I'm preparing a column that I'm almost done with on this, that the Obama administration is still trying to cover up the circumstances surrounding the hiring of Van Jones. So there are parallels here. I think both of these scandals have put the progressive movement on the defensive because the question has to be raised, do you really, in the progressive movement, want to tolerate people of this ilk, people who clearly have pro-Marxist or pro-communist views and who are associated with extremists who even resort to the defense of cop killers?
So, as I mentioned earlier, this Friday we are having our 40th anniversary conference for AIM, and I know you will be speaking a couple of times, and I think you're not aware of this, but we've just added a couple more people. One is Jonah Goldberg, and one is Lord Monckton, who will be on our global warming panel. But if our listeners are in this area, we would love for them to come by. It's going to be Friday all day from 9 to 5. And if you go on our AIM website, aim.org, you will see how you can register right in front. And if you're going to give you a special offer, there's one that says Coalition Intern, and you can sign up there and you can come for free. And it's lunch, and it'd be a great day of entertaining and interesting panels and discussions. And what you were responsible, Cliff, for bringing a very special guest in from New Zealand, Trevor Loudon. Tell us about him and what he'll be talking about.
Well, this is really a coup for the AIM 40th Anniversary Conference. Trevor Loudon is from, of all places, New Zealand. He's traveled probably about 17 hours to get here. He has broken some amazing stories. I mean, he's doing the work that our media used to do. Of course, there's been a complete collapse of investigative reporting in the United States. But he most recently was the first one on April 6th to break the story about Van Jones's communist connections. Now, of course, I followed up on that story. I did a number of Freedom of Information Act requests for information to the White House about Jones, and Glenn Beck, to his credit, led the campaign publicly on Fox News to have Jones ousted from his job because of his far-left extreme views. But it was all started by Trevor Loudon. Trevor's a researcher from New Zealand. He, until recently, was running a bakery. Now he's devoting more time on a more full-time basis to researching and writing. He's got this New Zeal blog. If you just put in New Zeal in the Google search engine, you'll go there. Be sure to go there on a regular basis. And I'm going to ask him to talk about how he uncovered the Van Jones scandal and some of the other Obama administration people that he has uncovered some very interesting information about. So he's just one. Roger, you've mentioned a couple other people that are coming. It's going to be a tremendous conference. In fact, it's getting so packed we may have to extend it into 2 days, it sounds like to me. I mean, this thing's getting bigger and bigger. But the key point is that at this point, you can. There are a limited number of free passes if you go to the AIMS site and sign up as a member of what they call the coalition or as an intern, and you can get in for the all-day affair and hear some tremendous speeches, Andy McCarthy talking about the war on terrorism, a global warming panel, Trevor Loudon. I know Don Irvine is going to speak about the new media and blogs. It's going to be really an exciting all-day conference.
Tony Blankley and John Fund.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we've really got a great lineup. And you're going to be talking both early on and going to close the event. And one of the other subjects I know that you're talking about is your investigation into Walter Cronkite. Now, what is that about?
Well, this is something, you know, Reed Irvine in his career went after some of the titans in the media. And one of them was Dan Rather, who, of course, ended up really in disgrace. It's a tragedy to see Rather flailing around, even to the extent of suing his former employer, CBS. But Walter Cronkite is another one that Reed Irvine focused attention on because it was, even though Cronkite has this reputation, even in death, as some kind of objective anchor, the guy who gave us the news, that's the way it is. The truth is, as Reed discovered, and as I've tried to follow up, Cronkite was a very liberal, biased newsman, had some very curious views about international affairs, even became an advocate of world government. I mean, this was all out in the open. He wrote about it in his own book, Cronkite did, called A Reporter's Life. And what we tried to do after Cronkite's passing was find out if there were any documents in the possession of the FBI about Cronkite. And the reason we asked for that is Cronkite did have some dealings over the years with the Soviet Union. He had been based in the Soviet Union at one time, actually gave an interview to a Soviet journalist in which he basically said there was no significant Soviet threat to the United States. Again, this was during the height of the Cold War, and under Cronkite, his newscasts were biased, especially during the Reagan era, against the buildup of America's defenses. This was all documented in a book written by Ernest Lefevre, then with the the Ethics and Public Policy Center. So we wanted to look into what the FBI had, if anything, on Cronkite, and what we've discovered very curiously, and I'm going to talk about this at the AIM conference, is that the FBI has informed us that they did have some files on Cronkite, but that they have been destroyed.
Wow, that's something. So you're doing a Freedom of Information search with them, huh?
Yeah, we put in a request, and now we've been told that the files had been there, but they've been destroyed. And this is very unusual, very strange, because normally when an agency like the FBI has files on a famous person, the files are kept. Because after their death, then an ordinary citizen can request those files and get copies of them for historical purposes. To find out what the FBI was doing. Maybe the FBI was investigating Cronkite for no legitimate reason. We don't know. Or maybe they had something on Cronkite. I just don't see. This is the problem now. We're being told, well, they had some files at one time, but they've been destroyed. Well, why? And this is, it's a continuing story. I don't have all the answers now, but we're on the road to trying to get some definitive resolution of what happened here.
Well, that's really something, Cliff. Well, listen, this has been great. Do you have any final thoughts before we let you go? And then I hope everybody gets a chance to come on Friday. And if not, I think we will be having video of Cliff and some of the other speakers up on our website, so stay tuned to that. But any final thoughts, Cliff?
Well, I just encourage everybody to go to AIM.org and sign up for the conference and show up on Friday.
Well, great, and sign up for our daily emails and read Cliff's great columns. And so Cliff, been a pleasure having you on Take Aim, and we will see you and talk to you very soon.
See you on Friday.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, I'm back live with you, and we're going to get right into our next guest. I'm going to turn this over to Don Irvine, the chairman of Accuracy in Media, my co-host. And Don, go ahead and take it from here.
All right. Pete, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, great. Good to have you. We'll start off here. This is Pete LaBarbera. He's the president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, or AFTA. Pete, why don't you tell me a little bit about AFTA and how you got started?
Well, first of all, Don, let me wish you congratulations on 40 years of AIM. That's awesome. And what a great organization. AFTA is Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. We're a single-issue group devoted to exposing and opposing the homosexual, bisexual, transgender movement. So there's many single-issue gay organizations. We're single-issue on the other side, trying to expose and fight the agenda.
How long have you been doing this?
We've really been doing it since about, well, I used to have a publication called Lambda Report, as you know, Don, which wrote about the agenda. That was launched in 1993, so gosh, I'm coming up on 17 years of fighting the gay agenda, and it's gotten a lot worse just in that short period of time.
Yes, it has. Well, you know, the Obama administration has had a lot of support, or at least when he was running for office, he had a lot of support from the gay rights movement, gay agenda people, I guess you could call it. They had a lot of high hopes for him. How has that worked out?
Well, he's in a little bit of a fix, Don. He promised the world to the homosexual activists, and now they're demanding that he deliver. And if he delivers, he's only going to be perceived as even more radical than he already is. This is the most radically pro-homosexual president we've ever had. And now, you know, in the campaign, not many voters knew about it, Don, but he called for example, the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, which Bill Clinton signed in 1996. Which protects states from being forced to recognize out-of-state gay marriages. He promised them that he would repeal the ban on homosexuals in the military. He came out for gay adoption, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, the entire agenda. And we want you to deliver on that. And right now he can give them words and appointments, but if he tries to repeal DOMA, there's going to be a lot of angry people in this country.
Well, he just kind of headlined the Human Rights Campaign dinner recently. How did that go? Did he satisfy anybody at that point?
Well, he used the most pro-homosexual rhetoric any president has ever used. He claimed that homosexual relationships are as admirable as normal relationships between a man and a woman. Of course, he didn't use the word normal, Don, because, you know, like calling your marriage normal would be politically incorrect, right? And that's one of the implications of gay marriage legislation. If there's a state that has homosexual so-called marriage, because, of course, I say so-called because it's not really marriage, the children have to be taught that it's acceptable and admirable for two men to, quote, marry each other. And so a lot of people don't think, you know, the homosexual activists use that line, well, what my gay marriage have to do with your marriage? And they sort of play that thing like, you know, it doesn't really have an effect, but it has a cascading effect throughout society. And the most serious issue, I think, is what the children are taught in schools. When you're teaching kids that it's acceptable for two guys or two women to get married, you're creating a even greater acceptance in the mind of the child that homosexuality is just a normal thing. And that's really deleterious to the kid's health.
All right, since you brought up the subject of education, let's talk about Kevin Jennings. He is the Safe Schools czar in the Department of Education. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, well, this guy's quite a character. Kevin Jennings founded GLSEN, which stands for the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. It's a very radical homosexual activist group, and its goal has been to promote the acceptance of homosexuality in schools. In fact, once Jennings said that their side, he embraced the idea that they promote homosexuality. You know, gay activists used to run from that idea because they always try to sort of make their agenda go through by stealth. But Jennings said, oh, yeah, I want to look, we should be promoting homosexuality. And so this guy, Harvard educated, very smart guy, an author, But he formed this organization, which has led to the proliferation of quote-unquote gay-straight alliances, which are basically homosexual propaganda clubs in schools. Those clubs now, Don, believe it or not, they're going down to from high school to middle school. They're going to end up in elementary schools. And if you, can you believe that? Gay clubs in elementary schools or even middle schools? You know, it's very dangerous for these kids, and that's his whole agenda.
Now, how did he get there, though? I mean, this, as I look back, I mean, as I recall, wasn't Governor Weld very instrumental kind of in elevating Kevin to the spotlight?
Yeah, Weld was the governor of Massachusetts. Jennings worked under Weld, pushed this safe schools program, and he did it all with subterfuge. It was in the name of safety. Now, to me, promoting homosexuality and gay identities and transgender identities for impressionable children, that's the farthest thing from safe that you can think of. And homosexual behavior, as you know, Don, is tied disproportionately to a number of sexually transmitted diseases, especially male-to-male homosexual behavior. In fact, a CDC study, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in 2005 found that 71% of all HIV/AIDS cases among men were linked to MSM, which stands for men who have sex with men. So obviously there's a hugely disproportionate risk to homosexual behavior, and yet they're promoting homosexuality in the name of safety, and that was his calling card that he used to push it in the Massachusetts legislature, and now they've duplicated that in other legislatures across the country, and they're even pushing it federally. So he uses the safety card. Now, another fascinating thing about Jennings is, you know, the GLSEN record, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, has a very reckless record when it comes to the way they've operated around children. Remember the Fiskgate scandal, Don?
Yes.
Remember that one? That was,
that.
Yeah, you don't want to remember it so bad. The Fiskgate scandal was a GLSEN-sponsored conference in Massachusetts at Tufts University in the year 2000. And what they did was they had a session for queer youth. That's their word. I'm not saying it. They said it. And it was for queer only, and I can't remember the age limits, but, it, you know, kids as young as, you know, probably 13, 12, definitely 14 were at this session, and there were these homosexual activists paid before by the state who were at this GLSEN-sponsored conference. And at the session, we advised, I and Brian Kammacher and some other people, I advised this one parent or this one conservative in Massachusetts, I said, tape the thing, because they're not going to believe you when you report what went on at this thing. So he brought in a little audio tape recorder and just secretly tape recorded, undercover tape recorded this session. What happened was they had these questions that they were passing out, and one of the questions after the speakers got done talking was, what's fisting? Well, I know it's a family show, so we can't really describe it, but suffice it to say that fisting is one of the most heinous perversions you can think of. It's a sadomasochistic thing. It's very dangerous, and they basically gave a how-to verbal lesson on how to do fisting. Now, this got out because of the parents' tape, and it became a scandal, at least among conservatives. Of course, the media didn't show a big interest. But the point is, Kevin Jennings was running GLSEN at the time. Now, if it had been a conservative organization and something this heinous was done at their conference, they'd probably be out of business in schools. But no, there was no effect on Jennings, and he just went on. And, you know, and at other conferences he's had, GLSEN has allowed, you know, these gay guides in the big cities to be passed out to kids. It happened in Chicago when GLSEN had an event here. I'm based in outside Chicago. They had a GLSEN conference, and the kids, they got this gay guide from Chicago, and it had ads for porn lines, bathhouses, leather bars. I mean, they were passing this out to the kids. So Kevin Jennings has a very reckless record with children, and he should not be in charge of safe schools for the whole country.
Well, I was reading in Human Events that, according to them, that in a 1995 speech, he admitted that the word safety was more of a political device, saying, quote, that it threw our opponents on the defensive and stole their best line of attack. And that in 97, you know, he said that promoting homosexuality, looking forward to a day when people, when they would hear that someone was promoting homosexuality, would say, yeah, who cares?
Right.
Is this the kind of guy that we want in the Department of Education?
Yeah, it's astonishing. I think the very fact that his whole life has been dedicated to promoting homosexuality, one activist side of it. Of course, they're not letting the other side come in. They're not letting us come in and talk about the health risks or the fact that people can leave the homosexual lifestyle. You know, there are many, many ex-gays. Don, as you know, you've met some. I've met probably over 50 former homosexuals in my life. These are people who once considered themselves gay and they left the lifestyle. You know, I think kids should hear that message. But and there's one personal story about Jennings, Don, which is fascinating. He had this student named Brewster when he was a private teacher in Boston, high school teacher, and he recognized that this kid, Brewster, who was a sophomore, was troubled. And so Jennings starts talking to the kid and finds out that this guy was seduced by a homosexual man in Boston. You know, so basically this predator got a hold of this kid. Now, Jennings didn't report this as a crime, which a teacher is supposed to do. Now he says he regrets that he didn't handle it differently. But the really scary thing to me, Don, is he used the predatory assault on this kid, you know, a boy, man-boy sex, which is basically pedophilia. The kid was 16. He used this as a sort of a means to confirm the kid as gay. So here's a boy who has sex with an older man, and Kevin Jennings says, teaches him, hey, it's okay to be gay. You know, that's the danger of having activist homosexuals in teaching positions. If they're going to promote their homosexuality, they shouldn't be there, because a lot of times the parents don't even know this is going on.
Right, and that episode is the one that's come to the fore recently that's put a lot of pressure. At least there have been calls to have Jennings, you know, resign or be fired. How do you feel about that? What do you see, you know, politically? Do you think this is actually going to happen? Will he keep his job? Will he lose it?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. Part of me hopes he stays on. I mean, we've never gotten this much of an opportunity to educate people on the Glisson agenda. I mean, I think all you got to do is do the substitute conservative Christian for gay and see what would happen. I also reported, I got a hold of a tape, which I can't find, by the way, Don, a tape where Jennings said in a church, he was talking about the religious right, so-called, he was putting him down, and he said the F word, and he said drop dead to the religious right. So imagine if there was a Republican administration and a conservative was going to be appointed, and it turns out that he was in a church and he said the F word to describe his attitude towards gays. Do you think he'd be on the job still?
Yeah.
It's just ludicrous.
Well, even if Jennings somehow does lose his job, wouldn't Obama be more than likely to appoint another gay activist in his place, or do you think he'd be a little more gun-shy on this?
I think you're right. I think he would appoint another gay activist, you know, he's just totally sold out to the homosexual lobby. And you know, Obama is very shifty. Remember in the election campaign when he had the Rick Warren debate, and he stood up there and he said he was for traditional marriage between a man and a woman? Well, now he's calling for the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act. Obama is a total phony on this issue. He used the marriage thing to get votes, to make himself look moderate like so many other issues, and then he actually governs far to the left of the way he campaigned. I mean, the gay issues, of course, McCain barely even raised them. I don't think he hardly raised anything. There was hardly any gay issues were even discussed in the campaign, and so now Obama's letting this whole thing loose. He wants to have homosexuals in the military in a time of war. He wants to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act. He wants to use the bully pulpit to promote gay adoption, which is, you know, that's ridiculous. Gay adoption is creating homes that are intentionally motherless or intentionally fatherless, you know, by design. Why would the President of the United States see that as an important issue? It's just amazing.
But is that politically smart for him? He obviously, as you said, he kind of lured people in. He was very deceptive coming into office on some of these issues. Where does he go with this, though? I mean, he now is walking kind of this fine line. If he goes back, won't he look like a total hypocrite to a lot of his supporters who don't support gay marriage and all these other issues?
Yeah, good point, Don. I think he's in a box, and I don't see any way out of it, and all we're going to do is we're going to educate people on his agenda. People have been so sort of blitzkrieged by the media. You know, the media is now practically, really it is, an arm of the homosexual movement, as you know, and AIM has done great work on exposing the media's gay connections. I wrote some articles. Cliff's done, you know, you've done some great stuff. And your father, bless his soul, you know, you guys helped expose this, but the media has now is just a shill for the media. And, you know, even on the Jennings story, remember, I don't know if you saw it, but George Stephanopoulos on ABC said, well, they looked into it, and it's not a big story. So, you know, the problem is cutting through the media smokescreen, and we're going to keep working at it. He can't go back now because the gays are already angry at him that he's not done more. And so we're going to just use this to show who the real Barack Obama is. He is a hard left president, and he even distorts the Bible to promote his pro-homosexual agenda.
Now, there's currently a bill in Congress, the so-called Respect for Marriage Act, that would repeal DOMA. How do you see that playing out? I mean, what's the difference in this Respect for Marriage Act versus DOMA?
Well, Respect for Marriage Act, if there was ever a lying and labeling law that forbid this kind of thing, that would not be able to be called that. They want to destroy the definition of marriage, and they call it Respect for Marriage. It's a total lie. DOMA is a solid piece of legislation which does two things. Number one, it prevents states from being forced to recognize out-of-state gay marriages. Number two, it identifies spouse as between one man and one woman in federal law. They need to take DOMA down so they can pass Obama's goal of creating essentially domestic partners, federal domestic partner legislation for homosexual couples. What I'm seeing is Barney Frank's not even for the repeal of DOMA right now. Their priority is going to be defensive ENDA, which is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is basically creating federal homosexuality-based rights in the workplace, Don, which is a very serious piece of legislation. It will have rippling effects throughout our economy, our society, because businesses will be forced to factor in pro-homosexual, pro-transgender political correctness in their hiring, firing, and business decisions. That's one thing he wants to do. And then I think Don't Ask, Don't Tell, they're going to try to basically open up the military to open homosexuality. Those are the two main things. And, of course, hate crimes, which is just almost arriving to him. It's right now in conference, or I think it's on its way out of conference. The hate crimes bill is the first piece of pro-homosexual legislation that he would sign.
All right, so you're saying hate crimes is probably going to go first before these others at this point in time? That's going to be more on the fast track?
Yeah, hate crimes is almost there. It passed the House and Senate. Now they're trying to reconcile the two versions. The Senate had a stronger, I believe the Senate had a stronger religious liberties protection. I'm not sure exactly where it is now, but that's going to come out. If it comes out unified, he will sign that. And Don't Ask, Don't Tell are the next two. I think the DOMA thing is a bone that he threw to the homosexual activists, but if they try to repeal DOMA now, there'll be a bigger backlash because, you know, Americans still support marriage. All across the country, marriage votes have passed.
Okay, well,
the votes to keep marriage between a man and a woman.
Yeah, back to the hate crimes. I mean, where did this whole thing start? I mean, this seems to be a movement that just kind of has taken on a life of its own and kind of steamrolled its way in. Where did this all begin?
Yeah, well, it began way back in the 70s, Don. You know, the homosexual movement has been very good at organizing and building upon its successes. It's the classic incremental strategy. You know, way back when they published their manifestos, they wouldn't talk about indoctrinating kids in school with one-sided messages about homosexuality. But now that they're more powerful, then this is where Jennings came in. He pushed that whole agenda. You know, it's just bit by bit, and their singular achievement is getting in the minds of people that homosexuality is not really a choice. It's just an innocuous orientation. Most people, I think a lot of people, I don't know if most, but a lot of people think homosexuals are just born that way. They have no choice about how they're living, regardless of someone's religious beliefs. And so the media helped them get that through, and then that helped them achieve their goal of classifying homosexuality as a civil right. They want to be labeled as a minority group. They now have worked their way into the diversity agenda, and diversity used to be about just race. Now it's homosexuality, which means that people in big corporations get these diversity awareness lectures, and lo and behold, you might be a Orthodox Jew or a Christian or a Catholic and a committed person of faith, and you go to work and you have to hear a pro-homosexual lecture. So what we're trying to do is educate people on the fact that gay rights comes at the expense of people's freedom to live out by their conscience, what their religion or their moral beliefs teach them about homosexuality and living it out in public. That is threatened by this very aggressive agenda, which basically says gay rights is more important than anything else, even your freedom to disagree.
Well, when they started making a big deal about this whole thing, that this is a, you know, kind of a civil rights type of issue, people in the civil rights movement were not too pleased with this.
Right, especially the African Americans. You know, I mean, and now I think they're more upset than ever because the homosexual activists just will not let this thing go. They continue to make the analogy between homosexuality and civil rights. And of course, the difference is, Don, I've never met, and I assume you haven't either. I've never met an ex-black. I've never met an ex-Hispanic. But I have met many ex-gays, and these are people living happy lives. I mean, if we're supposed to take somebody at face value, some gay guy says, "Hey, I'm gay. I'm happy. This is who I am." Why wouldn't you believe the person who says, "I used to be gay. Now I'm married. I have children. I don't. You know, that was I made some bad choices when I entered into adulthood, but I found faith, or maybe they didn't find faith, but they left homosexuality." There are lots of people like that. Most of them don't go public, and the homosexual movement is very, very hostile to this ex-gay movement.
Well, is there true discrimination against homosexuals, or, you know, in terms of people with sexual preferences that you see out there?
Well, you know, the dirty little secret today is that people don't get fired for, quote, being gay. My buddy Matt Barber, he's speaking at our banquet in Chicago in Arlington Heights on Saturday, October 24th. Matt Barber was a friend of mine. He's on the board of Americans for Truth, and he was fired from Allstate after writing an article online critical of gay marriage. So people are being disciplined and fired for standing up for traditional values. I mean, think about it, Don. The major corporations are courting people based on their gayness. They're giving special contracts to people. Like Kodak treats homosexuality as a sort of affirmative action supplier network. In other words, you know, they do minority, they give special, favors, but special attention to minority supplying companies, you know, for Kodak. Now they're treating homosexuality as a minority company. So if anything, the homosexuals are getting special treatment. They're being feeded by these corporations. So it's pretty hard for them to turn around and say, "Oh, we're just this victim of discrimination."
Well, is Disney still doing in their theme parks, you know, the days kind of devoted to gays? Is that still going on?
Yeah, they have the gay days, and I think they allow gay marriages, at the theme park, at least at Disneyland. I can't recall exactly. They just appointed a guy who's an open homosexual who's going to have a very senior job there in terms of programming. So Disney, I'm afraid, is deep, deep into pro-gay political correctness. And the question is, what's going to happen to these? How are we going to see it working out in the cartoons? Basically, the young people have been just brainwashed, Don, as you know. And I tell parents, even if they homeschooled or if they have their kids in conservative schools or if the kids are just, you know, solid, you still need to prepare them for these arguments they're going to be hearing at college and even high school now. Prepare them for the idea that somebody tells you, well, being gay is, quote, who I am. You know, your child needs to understand, no, it's not who you are. It's all about behavior, and behavior that's changeable and that's often destructive. I mean, there's so many health risks associated with especially male homosexuality. It's amazing to me that they're promoting this lifestyle as a good thing in schools.
Well, one thing that's bothered me about the school systems, and I live in Maryland, is just that they've adopted, and I don't know how many of these there are, but I'm sure you do, the Day of Silence that comes across every year. And, you know, that becomes a big deal, but there doesn't seem to be anything that's able to counterbalance that of any kind.
Yeah, the Day of Silence is a huge thing. It's in thousands of schools now. It's a day when the kids say that they're standing in silence in solidarity with all the persecuted gays and lesbians across the world. But it's just another tool that they use to do pro-gay activism in schools. And, it's hard to counter, Don, because you've got this group that has a single-minded devotion to one issue. And you know, conservatives and Christians and family people, they got church, they got their family, they got work and pleasure, and they're not really focused on this very singular agenda. And so there's a natural advantage that the homosexual side has. But I'm afraid that with the media pushing the gay agenda in so many ways, just unbelievable now how bad it is, that a lot of people are sort of throwing up their arms saying, well, they can't do anything about it. And I'm saying we have to stick with the truth. You know, you have to share the truth with people in your private sphere, with your families and friends. You cannot capitulate just because something's strong. I mean, I remember your father, you know, he had the World Without Communism conference, right? I mean,
right.
Just because communism was strong and the Soviet Union appeared dominant at one point didn't mean that you quit. We have to stay with principle, and homosexuality is wrong. It's dangerous in many respects, especially with men. It's immoral behavior according to most major religions. Now we're seeing the Episcopals, we're seeing the destruction of Christianity, several denominations like the Episcopal Church just going right off the deep end. But homosexuality has always been considered wrong in our Judeo-Christian heritage. Of course, Muslims regard homosexual behavior as they're even more strongly opposed than most Christians. So there's no reason why anybody should, just because something's politically correct, should embrace it.
Well, you spoke about the media earlier and how they really have been promoting this agenda. What about Hollywood? I mean, this is something that I see. I can sit down and watch programs. I am seeing so many more instances of kind of lesbian kisses or things like that, or at least the innuendo out there. I mean, how do you see this going?
Well, you know, that's the thing, Don. It's beyond innuendo now. I almost look fondly back at the days when it was innuendo. Now it's just direct, in-your-face homosexual behavior, because they know they can wear their inhibitions down. And that's the scary thing. I mean, there was a time, Don, I'm sure, like your dad and my dad, my father's still alive, he said he didn't even hear the word homosexual until he was in his 40s. Homosexual behavior was taboo. But with all the ubiquitous pro-gay messages and now the actual behavior, splashed on the screen and the big screen in Hollywood, people start losing their inhibitions. And there's a lot of acceptance now for, quote, same-sex couples, as if, hey, this is just an alternative version of normal couples. And that's just not how homosexuality is viewed. I believe in the Bible. I believe in history. And this is a radical departure from the past. And, you know, I guess the answer is it's just like the pro-life movement. There was a time when you didn't see pro-life views represented on screen. Now you do. You know, movies like Juno, and it's amazing the turnaround. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the day when there will be a happy ex-gay on a major TV show, somebody who's not the butt of ridicule, but somebody who just was involved in homosexuality and has left that. And we have to work towards that end, and we just have to keep fighting. And, you know, the lesson I got from your father, who I regard as one of the greatest men I ever met, was you don't give up. You stick with your beliefs, and you keep fighting. You never quit. And I'll never forget how your dad was, and that's how we have to be on this issue. I mean, it doesn't matter what the country's doing. It doesn't matter how much political correctness is out there. Homosexual behavior is always wrong. It's about behavior that's changeable. And that truth must be defended.
Pete, we've got to wrap this up, but will you please give us your website address or any other contact information you want to leave with us?
Sure. Thanks, Don. Our website is Americans for Truth, all written out, AmericansForTruth.com. And our banquet, as I said, is Saturday night, October 24th, anybody in Chicagoland. Our speaker is Matt Barber, who was fired by Allstate for writing an article against gay marriage. And if you're interested in attending that, I've got a phone number. Can I give that out, Don?
Sure.
It's 910-308-7619. That's 910-308-7619. That's Saturday, October 24th. 6:30 at the Christian Liberty Academy in Arlington Heights.
Great, Pete. Thanks for coming and joining us today.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. We'll see you later.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Okay, Don. Well, that was a great interview, and I think we've got another very successful show here under our belt, and just want to one more time remind everybody about tomorrow. We're hoping you can see it on C-SPAN if you can't make it there, or watch the C-SPAN schedule to see if it will be on, if not live tomorrow, maybe over the weekend. We're hoping they'll be there. So, Don, any final thoughts from you? Or
no, just looking forward to a great event. The lineup is online. It's a great event. Lord Monckton, John Fund, Tony Blankley. It's going to be a great conference.
That's absolutely right. And Jonah Goldberg, Andy McCarthy, Representative Lamar Smith. We've got so many good people there, and it should really be fascinating. Some things that you will not hear from the mainstream media. So there you have it. We will be back next week. One of our guests is Cliff May of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Until next week or tomorrow, so long.